This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My name is Alan Scott. This is where government actions meet business decisions, online at bgov.com, and of course on the air at 11 o'clock on Thursdays and Fridays at 2:30, right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It is the two-year anniversary of Dodd-Frank, and there's so much to talk about, trust me. Fortunately, we've got someone who can decode all of this for us. Her name is Katie North. She's a finance analyst at our disposal to help get us up to speed and also give us a glimpse into the future with Dodd-Frank. What's up for year three? We'll talk to her in just a minute from Bloomberg West. But we'll begin the program with a look at the world of housing. We've got lots of topics that can be conversation starters in this world. Real estate is definitely one of those icebreakers. Senior economic analyst Dr. Neela Richardson has authored another in a series of housing BGov studies entitled The Signs of a Housing Rebound, What to Look for Next. A definite conversation starter, right, Neela?
I think so. The last time we were on your show, Alan, my colleague Ian Hathaway and I told you that we didn't feel like there was going to be a recovery for quite some time. We said that actually the market had hit bottom and may sputter along the bottom for quite a while. Well, we left on such a down note, we thought we'd do a second piece so that we could come back and tell you what to look for when there is going to be a rebound. And we offered seven signs based on that first study that would signal a housing recovery.
Clear-cut indicators that we should all kind of keep our eyes open for. So why don't we just run through them real quick? So we've got housing prices stabilizing.
Absolutely. This is the number one sign people point to. Nationally, prices have continued to fall, but recently we've seen some positive signals that prices will stabilize. But prices are still expected to drop through 2012 and through the better part of 2013 before stabilizing nationally.
About 33%, in fact, they've fallen since 2006. Will this 33% drop be the new norm, or are we looking at a recovery of sorts?
House prices will never rebound under current market conditions to where they were at the height of the boom.
Right.
That price is unsustainable. But we hope to see the fundamentals improve, those being better employment numbers, people more likely to go enter into the housing market, and house prices to recover somewhat.
You turn on the news every day and you hear stories of people just kind of walking away. They can't afford it anymore. They may have lost their jobs. Foreclosure decline is yet another sign that you've referenced here in this study.
Right. Right now there are a number of distressed properties on the market, those in foreclosure, those up for short sale. The New York Fed is predicting about 3.6 million more foreclosures will come on the market through 2013. And so what we need to see is that these foreclosures clear the market and that the normal housing market returns.
The supply,
for there to be a rebound.
The supply as a result of this is astronomical at this point. Is that correct?
There's about 16 months of supply right now. If you add up the traditional market with what's called the shadow inventory, which incorporates both foreclosures and seriously delinquent, those mortgages that are delinquent 90 days or more, if you add those all up, that's 16 months of supply. In a normal housing market that's functioning, there's about 5.8 months of supply in the market. So you can see that we have a long way to go to clear these excess properties.
This is a long ride that we're in for. As those foreclosure properties start to clear up, we're going to start to see sales pick up at the same time as yet another sign that things are turning around.
There were some positive signals at the beginning of the year. I think the very temperate weather we experienced in the first 3 months of the year got people out of the house, got them home shopping, and there were some sales as a result. We've seen recently that sales have slowed down. This is the summer months. This is the traditional season when people buy new homes. And so hopefully those numbers will continue to rebound through the course of the summer.
You typically see existing home prices falling, that negotiation point dropping, but the same is kind of happening with new homes as well, correct?
Yes, that is true to an extent, but there is a floor for new homes. They have new homes tend to have more bells and whistles. They tend to be larger. Of course, they're newer, and there is a limit to what price a builder will accept. Not the same market as the distressed properties market, for sure. So we're not going to see the kind of steep declines in new home construction that you would see in distressed property sales that are composing a large portion of existing home sales currently.
Understood. So we talked about people kind of walking away from their homes before they go to foreclosure, and they're looking to either purchase something else before it shows up as a bad mark on their credit, or they're renting, or those people who have already been displaced and are able to get into a rental. So one of the signs to look for, you say, is rentals no longer leading the rebound.
The rental market has actually done very well since 2010. Rental prices are up 6%. Vacancies are also down, and more people of a variety of generations are choosing renting over buying. A lot of our younger households are deciding to rent instead of buy, and these young people make up a large percentage of first-time home buyers. But we also see that middle-aged households are delaying home purchases, choosing to go into the rental market. That is great that the rental market is rebounding, but what we need for the economy to improve is the single-family home purchases to clear and new home construction to start going back to historical norms.
It's funny, in a lot of the desirable areas, and there is no there's a place for everyone, let's put it that way, and we'll have somebody on the phone here in just a minute. His name is Jeff Detweiler. He's president of Long & Foster Companies, to talk about the fact that there definitely is a place for everyone in any market. But in a lot of areas, especially around the base realignment, schools tend to be an issue, and I know that's something that agents really can't address, what school you're going to be going to. But without construction of new schools, a lot of areas are populated to the point that the only new construction you can find is for active adults. So I find myself in the position that I would love to purchase something, but I'm not an active adult yet. So, oh well, what are you going to do? Another sign that we're going to look for is government programs helping more homeowners. Talking about HARP and HARM, are these working?
They are working somewhat. What HAMP is a program put forward by the federal government to modify existing mortgages to make them more affordable for homeowners who've fallen to delinquent on their loans and meet certain standards. Right now, about 51% of HAMP modifications are current or paid off. That means about 49% are in some form of delinquency. So there has been some success, but it's short of the expectations of the federal government to modify about 3 to 4 million mortgages. HARP is another program to help underwater homeowners. Those are people who owe more on their mortgages than what they are worth, to refinance into mortgages that have lower interest rates, hopefully to get those payments down on a monthly basis and to stave off foreclosures in the future.
HARP loans doubled in the first quarter to about 180,000 from 93,000
right.
In the previous quarter.
HARP was advanced. They did some basically improved the program, turned it into what's known as HARP 2.0, mm-hmm. and it's had some more success in that direction.
Severely underwater buyers here, or homeowners, I should say, is the group of people that they're really looking to help. So, in summation, how would you say the findings were? Were they encouraging? Not so much?
I think that we still have a long way to go in the housing market.
So you haven't changed it at all from the last time you were here.
Yeah, I'm still the bearer of bad news, unfortunately. But at least I think there are signposts that we can look at to remove some of the uncertainty about whether or not housing will be rebounding. And that's what we tried to do in this report, The 7 Signs of Recovery, is to give investors and people who just want to buy houses some indicators of what a rebounding housing market looks like.
So her name is Dr. Neela Richardson, and kind of on the heels of what she just spoke about, I want to bring someone else into the conversation who's kind of living and breathing, or as he put it, he is the boots on the ground. On the line with us is Jeff Detweiler. He's president of Long & Foster Companies. Long & Foster, of course, the largest real estate company in the Mid-Atlantic, giving them an opportunity to see the good, the bad, and the ugly the housing market has to offer. It's Jeff. Jeff, thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me, Alan. It's a pleasure to be here.
So you've seen the study that Neela wrote. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, we agree with many of the things that Neela says in the report, but we're not nearly as concerned about the the REOs, the foreclosures and REOs, as that's talked about in the initial premise. The problem with the housing recovery, we believe that a more normalized market that Neil spoke about is several years off, probably 2015 anyways, but we'll see a slow, gradual recovery. We're in that right now. It's really a lack of demand that we're dealing with right now.
Really?
We've seen an awful lot of activity this spring, which has been very encouraging. But quite honestly, Neela speaks about the 16 months of inventory. You know, we're at the, depending where in the Mid-Atlantic, we're at 2 to 4 year lows in terms of inventory. If anything has held back sales, would be quality inventory on the market. So we see an interesting thing. We see that banks are foreclosing. The REOs are being sold by the banks. Investors are showing a rabid pace for purchasing those properties, and the traditional consumers on hold. And we see the fact that that lack of demand in the traditional consumer, both the first-time home buyer and the move-up buyer, is what is really keeping this recovery from working itself fully through.
So it's interesting. You mentioned, obviously, Long & Foster, biggest group in the Mid-Atlantic handling real estate transactions. So it's tough to make a broad generalization with the size of Long & Foster's footprint. This is a fluid market, so there are definitely pockets of goodness out there, as I'm calling it. I'm doing the air quotes as well.
Undoubtedly. Real estate is as local as any business that there is, and it's from zip code to zip code, neighborhood to neighborhood. Generally speaking, you know, we think that the overwhelming aspect is that there are four fundamentals that are headwinds to this recovery in the housing market, and we see that the only medicine to cure these ills, these four fundamental ills, is just time. And it's just going to take time to work through them, and that's probably several years.
Jeff, I have a question for you. How much of the lack of demand do you think is attributable to the fact that it's just harder to get a mortgage these days?
You know, I don't have empirical facts on that, but I would say that the mortgage financing is having a negative impact on 2 out of 10 potential buyers. So, if I can just expand on answering that question, if we were to look back 10 years ago and there were 10 interested parties in transacting real estate, we think that 2 out of 10 of those people are no longer eligible or capable of getting financing. It's a real challenge. The pendulum has swung too far, and there's very good eligible borrowers that can't get financing. Number two, the negative equity that so many homeowners have, I think it's what, 1 in 4 or 1 out of 3 homeowners that have a mortgage are underwater. They have literally and psychologically taken themselves out of the market. Even if they can afford their current mortgage and they could even afford to move up and purchase a larger, more expensive house from their current home, the fact of bringing a check to the closing table has psychologically impacted them that they've taken themselves out of the game. So you have another 2 to 3 people out of 10 that used to participate in the housing market that have precluded themselves these days. And then we're seeing a tremendous pay down on consumer debt and a whole buying behavior that says, I'm not comfortable owing as much money today as I was yesterday, even if my finances are the same. And we see another 2 out of 10 people have said, I'm not buying anything big right now, or I'm not increasing my debt load. And so we see literally maybe where we had 10 people that were interested in participating in the housing market a decade ago, today that's 5. And we think that as the pendulum swings back into balance with mortgage financing, as we burn through some of the negative equity, and as we find some kind of floor in terms of where the consumer is satisfied in terms of its debt level, we think that it'll take a number of years for that to happen, but 1 at a time, those 5 potential players will come back into the market, and that's why we think it's going to just take time.
You're listening to Bloomberg Government.
Alan, I think I just gave you a whole other set of indicators for a rebound as well.
I think you're right. So we're looking at not only your seven, but the group that Jeff just gave us. And by the way, this is Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Our guests right now are Jeff Detweiler. He's the president of Long & Foster and chief operating officer for the Long & Foster companies. And in the interest of full disclosure, that does include a mortgage company as well by the name of Prosperity Mortgage. And Dr. Neela Richardson, author of a study here, which is The 7 Signs to a Housing Recovery or Rebound, What to Look for Next. This is great. You know, Jeff, as you sit back now and observe the housing market, what kind of things are you going to give as advice to people who may be in one of those financially distressed situations? You know, you're coaching your agents to say what if they're considering walking away, they're considering, you know.
There's two things. What's interesting is there is a boom in the housing market right now today around investor properties. 27% of all the transactions that occurred, according to NAR, last year and the first part of this year have all been properties purchased for investment purchases. And that is up almost 65 or 70% from where it was the previous year. So there seems to be a tremendous, tremendous appetite from the investor community to buy residential real estate. And we are coaching our realtors to make sure that they are looking in all the appropriate places to cultivate these potential investors as it relates to residential mortgages. If you think about the traditional consumer, what we're trying to say, and I don't want to get into, you know, a mathematic equation on the radio, but if you think about it, if you're in a house and its value has fallen 30%, and you've always wanted a slightly bigger, better house, another bedroom, two more bathrooms, whatever the case may be. And if it's in your same neighborhood, it arguably has fallen a similar 30%. Well, guess what? You might have to bring a check to the closing table to get out of your underwater mortgage on the home that you're selling, but you have to bring less to the table to buy that new house today. Right. We're trying to coach our realtors that this is a great time to move up. If you always wanted a slightly larger, bigger house than the one you're in, even though prices have fallen, if you're staying in the same relative neighborhood, generally speaking, you're going to be able to purchase that house that you wanted for less absolute dollars than you've lost on your current house. So economically, you can make the case that that this decline in prices have actually been advantageous for you if you want to make that move. So we're coaching them to look and present that.
His name is Jeff Detweiler. He is president of Long & Foster Realtors and Long & Foster Companies. Her name is Dr. Neela Richardson. Her musings can be found at bgov.com. Thank you both for joining me. This is Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and we've crossed a milestone. That's right, the 2-year anniversary of Dodd-Frank and the Wall Street Consumer Protection Act. It was signed into law July 21st, 2010. To bring us up to speed on all things Dodd-Frank, our very own Katie North, a policy finance analyst with Bloomberg Government. Katie, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks.
First off, I have to give you a ration of ribbing here, because whenever we want you on the show, you're never in town. And today is no exception. Coming to us from Bloomberg West out in San Francisco, the jet setter Katie North. So 2 years ago, we kind of began this journey. I say this in the narrowest sense of the word. How have things changed since this was launched?
Well, you know, we're now almost 5 years after the start of the financial crisis,
right,
and really only about 30% of the Dodd-Frank law has actually been implemented to this point. So when you start to take a look at what's different since the financial crisis, regulators have actually focused a lot more on a lot of the reporting and monitoring types of regulations rather than the types of tools that are meant to kick in during a future financial crisis. So unfortunately, not a whole lot has changed. There have been some other aspects that regulators have focused on related to new fees and assessments on the banking industry that are meant to recoup some of the cost of new regulation. And then, of course, they've been ramping up and creating new offices and bureaus, hiring folks, getting new office space to start ramping up these regulations and writing them and passing them into existence.
Month of June, extremely active with regard to Dodd-Frank. Your highlights noted several instances of activity. What were some of the highlights that happened?
So in June, there was a lot of activity, and what we actually expected here in the past couple of weeks, a major milestone, which is the first filing of what is called living wills for the largest bank holding companies. This is a major development in Dodd-Frank because it's bringing information to the federal government that's they've never had access to before. And what these big banks were forced to do was sit down at a board level and take a look at all of their legal entities, all of their major structures and subsidiaries, and how they would wind those down in the event of a future financial crisis, potentially selling them off to other companies or finding a way to resolve in some other direction so that they could keep major operations flowing, check cashing features, payment clearing features going during a future crisis. And they're also going to be taking a look at their outstanding counterparty exposure to other systemically important companies going forward, which this means that if Bank of America was overexposed to, say, of another very large bank like Wells Fargo, they could go in and make some changes to reduce that exposure to prevent systemic risk from building up in the financial system. So this living will process is that there was 9 major banks that had to file these, you know, 1,000-page reports mm-hmm. to the federal government the very beginning of July, and that is a major milestone for Dodd-Frank. But again, this is a reporting function. It's not actually meant to make any real specific changes. It's really about monitoring and reporting at this point.
Jamie Dimon was in the news a lot recently, obviously. J.P. Morgan, I read somewhere recently that they are subject to, I want to say it's several thousand, may very well have been tens of thousands of regulations with regard to securing money and making sure that the processes flow accordingly. How would, say, a Basel or Dodd-Frank, how would that change moving forward? How would things look different for them?
So with all of the trading losses J.P. Morgan, there are 3 major rules that would have kicked in and potentially made some changes for those developments had they been in place at the time that the trades were engaged in. One is the Basel capital requirements, which generally require more capital to hold against your assets. But 2, there's very specific new capital requirements for your trading book that may have changed the way that they held capital against those exposures. And then finally, we have the Volcker rule, which is currently under development. It was meant to be completed by this month, but regulators have said they're not going to make that deadline. It may come later this year, maybe before the summer. But regardless of whether or not we get a final rule on the Volcker rule that limits this kind of proprietary trading that banks can really kind of, it can be very, very risky, and there can be high leverage that exposes banks to a lot of risk. The Volcker rule may have had an impact on the J.P. Morgan transactions. We just don't know enough about the details. J.P. Morgan likely would try and argue, and as they have before members of Congress, that this was a very much a hedging transaction. Mm-hmm. It was meant to hedge exposures on their balance sheet, and that would actually be allowed under the Volcker rule. And really, it depends on many of the details that regulators are currently trying to figure out as to how it would have played out if we could, you know, turn back the tide and try and take a look back into it to when those transactions actually occurred.
Her name is Katie North. She is a finance analyst with Bloomberg Government. All about Dodd-Frank, everything you could possibly want to know is all residing in Katie's head, and she is kind enough to share it with us. Katie, thank you very much.
Thanks, Alan.
You promised to come back and be in town next time we need an update?
Happy to.
All right. Thanks to Neela Richardson. Her latest study, The Signs of a Housing Rebound, What to Look for Next, is available for download on bgov.com. Also want to thank Jeff Detweiler for joining us. He's president of the Long & Foster Companies and provided us an eye-opening overview of kind of what his company is seeing in the real estate market today. Need more? Check out longandfoster.com. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at BloombergGov. For show updates, follow me at Alan L. Scott. We'll get together again next Thursday at 11 a.m. Lots more to say about the business implications of government actions for Bloomberg Government's capital impact on 1500 AM Federal News Radio. I'm Alan Scott.